letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kbu.org or send to KBU, Development Tire, 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please answer in the cover letter the question, why is KBU important? More information on the development director position is available at kbu.fm/development-hire-2018.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO, Portland.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. David K. Johnston, who's been in this studio, has published an article on alternate titled, Donald Trump May Have Just Lied His Way Into Prison. He writes, pay close attention to the front page story in Wednesday's New York Times about Paul Manafort's lawyer cooperating with Trump's lawyers. It may well prove to be very important news that is just a short way down the road. He writes, Bob Summerby, pardon me, at the Daily Howler, among others, has poked fun at the piece since it basically has one key new fact. Not the torrent of them we find in so many other important stories about Trump White House intrigues. Its sole named source is Rudy Giuliani, Trump's television lawyer. Giuliani acknowledged that information gleaned from Manafort's meetings with FBI agents and prosecutors as a cooperating witness was being passed to Team Trump by Manafort lawyer Kevin Downing. That one fact could well doom Trump's presidency and perhaps land Trump and others behind bars, as the Times note. There is nothing illegal about what Downing did. That said, this double agent-ish conduct would make excellent fodder for law school lectures on ethics, law enforcement, and risky criminal defense strategies. After Manafort was convicted of 8 federal felonies last August and was about to endure the cost of a second federal trial, the former Trump campaign manager agreed in September to cooperate with Mueller's prosecution team. And David K. Johnston writes, we call that flipping because you switch sides from criminal to law enforcement. Flipping requires criminals to be completely truthful in every detail with prosecutors about known crimes, as well as disclosing still hidden criminal activity. In breaking its plea agreement with Manafort, the special prosecutor's office said that after flipping sides, Manafort lied to FBI agents and prosecutors again and again. They promised a detailed recitation of these additional crimes in their pre-sentencing report on Manafort. And speaking for myself, that's the part that will be out in the open, and that is the part that allows much more of a peek into what's going on than has been available to others aside from the president, evidently. He writes that Mueller's team knew enough to say it can prove Manafort lied repeatedly and committed new crimes, and doing so had to vex Trump. Now jump forward to the days after this fall's congressional elections, when the White House revealed that Trump was working with his own lawyers to answer written questions submitted by Mueller's team. The day after the election, Trump forced the resignation of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General and installed Matt Whitaker, an Iowa lawyer deeply involved in an investment scam who had repeatedly said he favored shutting down the Russia investigation and disbanding the Mueller team. Speaking for myself again, what we're looking for here is evidence of obstruction of justice by getting rid of the prosecutor's boss, obstruction of justice by offering pardons, that sort of thing. Returning to the text, 2 days after Sessions' removal, multiple news reports appeared about Manafort's apparent lack of cooperation, resulting in increasingly tense talks with Mueller's team. ABC News, citing one source familiar with the talks, reported that Mueller's team was not getting what they want from Manafort. Leaks of this kind never come from prosecutors, indicating a new shift in strategy by lawyers for Trump and his potential co-defendants. 2 days after the election, Trump told a Rupert Murdoch-owned newspaper, the New York Post, that he would not rule out a pardon for Manafort and that was a signal to the jailed felon that he was still in good stead with Trump. Today, Trump reiterated that position, which could be seen as obstruction of justice by dangling a pardon to cover up Trumpian crimes. If Trump and his lawyer relied on what Manafort's lawyer passed on from meetings with Team Mueller, this double-agent legal game may blow up in Trump's face. Significantly, Whitaker has not been confirmed by the Senate, making his appointment contrary to the Constitution. At a testy White House press conference on November 9th, Trump said, quote, "I don't know Matt Whitaker," end quote, and was unaware of Whitaker's strong views on Mueller's Russia investigation, a surprisingly blatant lie, even by Trumpian standards, since in October Trump spoke of his regard for Whitaker. On November 15th, Trump wrote this tweet, "The inner workings of the Mueller investigation are a total mess. They have found no collusion and have gone absolutely nuts. They are screaming and shouting at people, horribly threatening them to come up with the answers they want. They are a disgrace to our nation," end quote. There's much more to that article, and I encourage you to pull it up. It is by David K. Johnston. You can find it on alternet.org. Alternet.org. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. In the news today, genetic editing. From the Guardian, Chinese authorities have declared the work of He Jiankui, a scientist who claims to have created the world's first gene-edited babies, a violation of Chinese law and called for the suspension of all related activity. The genetically edited infant incident, say that three times quickly, genetically edited infant incident reported by media blatantly violated China's relevant laws and regulations. It has also violated the ethical bottom line that the academic community adheres to. It is shocking and unacceptable. That's a quote from Zhu Nanping, a vice minister for science and technology. And he told the state on television that. Zhu called for the suspension of any scientific or technological activities by those involved in his work. The Southern University of Science and Technology in Shenzhen, where he is an associate professor, has said it has had no knowledge of his research. The scientist has said his project was approved by an ethics committee at HarmonyCare Shenzhen Women's and Children's Hospital, which has also denied any involvement. He shocked the global scientific community when he claimed this week to have edited the genes of embryos that resulted in the birth of twin girls named Lulu and Nana. So, of course, I want to comment on this. Pardon me. The news about an effort at human eugenics was revealing. The news is that human twins, girls, were altered via the clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats gene editor, the CRISPR-Cas9. Scientists have taken it upon themselves to avoid human experimentation with genetic alteration, and that's a good thing. Of course, a rogue experimenter has emerged, transfixed with the power and glory that could be his if his effort to create an AIDS-proof pair of humans proves helpful and viable. The press relates this in the simplest terms, and of course the vast majority of the public cannot be expected to follow genetic research on a peer basis, but I have noticed, too, that a very salient aspect of CRISPR-Cas9 research has gone pretty well unmentioned in the press, specifically that the technique is quite clumsy. We have been told the opposite, in fact, and have been led to believe that it is instead very precise indeed, but CRISPR-Cas9 transposition carries genetic information along with it that is unanalyzed and unquantified. It is far more precise than earlier methods, but that's like saying a drunk driver is more precise than a June bug. You have been given the impression that a word of genetic command can be transcribed. It's more like a page from a book can be transcribed into the book of instructions of the target organism, and we don't know what else is on the page. Especially when you consider the impact of recently discovered epigenetic information analogs. This inherent slop is called off-target genome editing. So for the newborn mutated twins and their progeny, there is no way to know what will eventually emerge. It may be that their great-grandchildren will be born with genetic mutations that will render them quite ill. And I think companies like Monsanto would much prefer that you not know that sort of thing, that, for example, were it not for the accidental, unpaid, and spurious inquiry by a concerned scientist, potatoes would have long been produced with a gene that would kill anyone allergic to Brazil nuts. It speaks to the state of journalism, too, that that only the largest journalistic organizations would even have a science reporter on staff, and the rest of their stable is likely to be so overworked that it is unlikely, even if they had the education, that they would monitor such scientific developments closely. This is a common situation for anyone who follows the chemical, pharmaceutical, and nuclear industries as well. There is no substitute for public education and a free press, because without it, there is no democratic force whatsoever. And this is where I make a little plug for community radio. We have a free press here. We have volunteer reporters. We have a tiny staff that doesn't have time to report, by and large. Although, you know, some of them try. And yet we managed to gather some stories. And there are times when we and the local press, and sometimes we alone, are the only witnesses to things that really need to be reported. So you need to support community radio. You need to support your community radio station for that and many other reasons, I should think. So I'm going to encourage you to go to kboo.fm and hook up. If you've never joined before, just $5 a month will do it, and we'd be glad to have it. And it's that sort of sustained membership that really has set us up for success. We're doing well as a community radio station. Now, I know that was almost a pledge pitch, and in just a couple of few weeks, we're going to go into a membership drive again and try to get more memberships, try to raise funds for the radio station. But you can get in the door early. Just pull up kboo.fm. It's easy. And it's the right thing to do, isn't it? It's only fair. Dateline Rio de Janeiro, and this is from Radio Havana, Cuba. U.S. President Donald Trump's National Security Advisor John Bolton met Brazil's far-right president-elect Jair Bolsonaro on Thursday to discuss regional security issues and build on the ideological affinity between the two leaders. Speaking for myself, the ideological affinity, of course, is the most corrupt fascism. But returning to Radio Havana, which is not as, shall we say, florid as I am in expressing opinion. According to Reuters, the meeting was attended by Bolsonaro's future national security advisor and future defense minister, both retired army officers, and incoming foreign minister Ernesto Araujo, an anti-globalist who believes climate change theory is a Marxist invention. Bolsonaro has threatened to follow Trump's lead and pull Brazil out of the Paris Climate Agreement, despite having the world's biggest rainforest in the Amazon. On Wednesday, he said he pushed the government to withdraw Brazil's offer to host the UN climate conference next year, maintaining that Brazil's sovereignty over the Amazon was at stake. Bolton is expected to seek Brazilian support to apply pressure to Venezuela's government and other progressive governments like those of Cuba and Nicaragua. In another step following Trump, Bolsonaro plans to move the Brazilian embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, despite angering Arab countries that are big buyers of Brazilian meat. So now it's time to turn to This Week in Whiteness. And I'll focus, rather than the most grotesque lynchings that continue to go on by our police forces, let's look at the racist child abductions, which have sneakily continued at the U.S.-Mexico border. I'm going to use an article by Ginger Thompson in ProPublica. And bear with me just for a moment. I had to adjust some equipment. All right there. And she writes, the Trump administration has quietly resumed separating immigrant families at the border, in some cases using vague or unsubstantiated allegations of wrongdoing or minor violations against the parents, including charges of illegally reentering the country as justification. Over the last 3 months, lawyers at Catholic Charities, which provide legal services to immigrant children in government custody in New York, have discovered at least 16 new separation cases. They say they have come across such instances by chance and by their own sleuthing, after children were put into temporary foster care in shelters with little or no indication that they arrived at the border with their parents. ProPublica stumbled upon one more case late last month after receiving a call from a distraught Salvadoran father who had been detained in South Texas and whose four-year-old son, Brian, had literally been yanked from his grasp by a Customs and Border Protection agent after they crossed the border and asked for asylum. Julio, the father, asked to be identified only by his first name because he was fleeing gang violence and worried about the safety of relatives back home. I quoted Julio as he was sobbing uncontrollably. "I failed him," he said. "Everything I had done to be a good father was destroyed in an instant." ProPublica tracked down Brian, who has reddish brown blonde hair and an endearing lisp, at a temporary foster care agency in New York City, and reached out to the lawyer who represents him. Until that phone call, the lawyer, Jody Ziesemeyer, a supervising attorney at Catholic Charities, Jody Ziesemer, had no idea that Brian had been separated from his father. The chaos, she said, felt disturbingly like zero tolerance all over again. "It's so disheartening," Ziesemer said. "This was supposed to be a policy that ended." And she writes, "Officially it has. On June 20th, President Donald Trump signed an executive order retreating from his so-called zero-tolerance immigration enforcement policy, which called on authorities to criminally prosecute adults caught illegally crossing the border and separate them from any children they brought with them. A week later, a federal judge, Dana M. Sabra, issued an injunction against the separations and ordered the government to put the thousands of affected families back together. Sabra, however, exempted cases in which the safety of the child was at risk and crucially imposed no standards or oversight over those decisions. As a result, attorneys say immigration officials, taking their cues from an administration that has made it clear it still believes family separations are an effective deterrent, are using whatever justification they can find with or without substantiation to deem immigrant parents unfit or unsafe. This is where I would like to invite your calls and comments. I have some other topics to bring up on this show. This is Press Watch on KBOO Portland. But I want to make a big deal about this. This is a sneaky thing. And it reminds me of what I've learned about the Trump administration going around the law to aggress against transgender persons. Right now, with my passport expiring in a couple of years, I'm facing the fact that when I try to renew my passport, I'm likely to face arbitrary barriers. And this is what other transgender people are reporting, a woman who was trying to get a passport so that she could get asylum from this sort of thing in Sweden, said that her passport was denied because now she has to go and prove that she has had surgery, even though she had had surgery as a teen, and it has been decades, if I recall correctly, a long time in any event, and those records had been sealed. So she has to find records that have been sealed in order to get a passport to run away from the bigotry of the Trump administration. But here we are talking about the racist aggression of the Trump administration, in this case, versus persons seeking refugees fleeing from the societies that were destroyed in the 1980s and following years by the Reagan administration, the Bush administration, and the CIA and the Pentagon, societies in which the worst people were given cash and logistical assistance so that they could murder their own citizens, societies that are still reeling from U.S. aggression. Quoting Nessa Desai, a senior attorney at the National Center for Youth Law, "If the authorities have even the most specious evidence that a parent is a gang member or some kind of blemish on their record, anything they can come up with to say that the separation is for the health and welfare of the child, then they'll separate them," end quote. In an email, senior Customs and Border Patrol official acknowledged that immigrant families are still being separated, but said the separations had nothing to do with zero tolerance. The official added that, quote, "This administration continues to comply with the law and separates adults and children when required for the safety and security of the child," end quote. The official declined to say how many children have been taken from their parents for what was said to be their own protection. CBP officials explained that Brian was such a case. One official said that the agency had conducted a routine background check on Julio and found that it confirmed his gang affiliation with MS-13. Spokeswoman Corey Schiermeier declined to provide the evidence the agency had to support the allegation, saying only that it was law enforcement sensitive. Nor would she say why CBP believed Julio was a danger to his child, but Sobral's order, she said, did not prevent these separations. In fact, it explicitly allows DHS to continue with this prior practice, end quote. So, the family sundering terror proceeds sneakily under the radar. Your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. I'll go to the first caller. Hello, CB. Hello?
Am I the one that's on the air?
Yes.
I wanted to help folks connect that it could happen to them too, even if they think they're privileged whites. Anyone, anytime could be falsely accused or targeted because of political activism or being a whistleblower, or mistaken, or just someone's in a bad mood. The same thing happened to me 25 years ago when I left a domestic violence situation and went to a shelter, was in labor, and at the hospital, someone, according to the Northeast Portland Precinct homicide detective, kidnapped my children to sell them into prostitution for drug money. And it could also happen to folks who were, as I was, a foster parent, being a whistleblower about how the system was separating families because of racism, because they could make money selling cute little blondes, because they had employees in Multnomah County Children's Services Division, at least in the 80s.
I want to point out that there's money in this.
Yeah.
There's money. I mean, even if it's just in the form of comfortable salaries, there's money in this. And I'm going to continue with this. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The banks make money out of human trafficking. The private prisons make money. The surveillance makes money. Some companies that, you know, do foster care replacement and adoption that make money. And then there's lots of money in child prostitution. Babies and toddlers are small and quiet. They cannot testify. They're easily stored and transported. And more exciting is they wrinkle and they have small holes. So it's a problem that we need to wake up to and do something, not only for the south of the border, but also we also need to do it with here in the city of Portland, because it's happening in the city of Portland. And it's not just to poor and houseless people who are having their children taken from them. It's not just to political activists and whistleblowers. And we need to stand in solidarity with each other. We need to provide trauma-informed care and compassion. My children haven't gotten it from society. We need to change the whole way we police, and we also need to be careful that we don't reward the FBI by creating these different child trafficking situations so they have an excuse to get more money to interfere with internet and privacy and neutrality and security, that they're not be complicit in these horrible crimes so that they can make more money and have more power. So I'd like us to really look at what we can do here and now, have empathy and compassion, and I'd like to hear more of what we can do as Portlanders with different levels of access or transport or money.
Well, one of the reasons that this story gets me so much is because my child was taken from me because the judge, Paula Kirshner, who's still a judge here in Portland, felt that I was a bad person as an anarchist.
I am so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Well, that was 25 years ago. And yeah, I hear your pain. And when I'm saying abolish ICE, it's because these things have an echo in this society, and this is part of the aggression that a conformist and classist society and a racist society applies to us. Thanks very much for your call.
In a private time, hear more of what happened to your family and how I can support you.
Oh, well, that's long resolved, or the pain the pain is too far in the past to deal with now. But thank you very much for those words. I want to talk a little further about this case that is brought up, as I was saying, in the article by Ginger Thompson in ProPublica. She was talking about Brian, who was taken away from Julio at the border on the evidently false allegation, since they can't provide a shred of evidence and hide behind, law enforcement sensitive, you know, I'd have to kill you to tell you that stuff, which no one believes anymore. Attention, right-wingers, that's old. Anyway, according to Evangelista, Julio arrived at the border in mid-September carrying a letter prepared by a Salvadoran lawyer that explained that he had fled El Salvador with his son because they had been attacked and threatened by gangs there for years. At Evangelista's request, the Salvadoran lawyer and Julio's former employer sent sworn statements vouching for Julio's character and stating that he was never involved in criminal activity. Evangelista said, "I'm furious about this," referring to U.S. immigration authorities. "They're treating him like a criminal so they can justify taking away his son. Where's the proof? It's his word against theirs. It sickens me." So what I'm saying is that the Trump policy of separating families in order to terrorize refugees coming up from the countries that the U.S. has historically terrorized is ongoing, and they have simply found another avenue to do it. Going to the next caller. A number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'll go to LJ.
Oh, hey, Teresa, how are you?
I'm doing well, LJ. How are you?
Pretty good. First of all, I want to thank you for the genocide cover-up show. Thank you for doing Alice's Restaurant. That was a that was a real nice trip down memory lane. So thank you. Very much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Right, so anyway, just a couple of quick points, and I'll get off the air.
All right.
First of all, what number 45 is doing is not really any different than policy that was established by the evil imperial empire years and years ago. I want to bring up a couple of things. In 1939, a boatload of Jewish people trying to escape the Holocaust, the ship that they were on were refused docking here. They couldn't find a place to dock that ship anywhere. All of those boatload of Jewish people, I think there was over 900 of them, obviously had to go back to Europe, where they were gassed to death by the Nazis. And then let's talk about the Japanese Americans that were all rounded up here during World War II, and they were essentially put in concentration camps. There is a recommended book I would like you to read. I forgot the author's name, but it's called Broken Twig, and it's about what the Japanese American population in Oregon had to go through as a result of policy by the evil imperial empire. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Yeah, the U.S. did turn away thousands of Jewish refugees, and there was that famous case of the ship, the St. Louis, which is they were turned away to their doom. And it's a good point that this nativism and racism has taken various forms over the years. This country, as I was saying last week, is put together. Its profit model is the crushing of various defenseless groups. And the way it manifests in the world today with our 1,000 military bases is basically if you don't have enough cash for the latest anti-aircraft missiles, you're subject to invasion. and must fear invasion from the United States and the devastation of your communities and the violation of your sovereignty. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. I've been saying that the evidence is now coming out from the ACLU, from ProPublica, also that the Trump administration is continuing with its terror policy of separating, basically abducting children from their parents, from people who are coming to the border to attempt to legally apply for asylum. There's nothing illegal about applying for asylum. You do have to commit the infraction of crossing the border sometimes, especially as the border crossings are closed or effectively closed to groups of impoverished persons, to brown people, essentially. You have to get across somehow, and it's legal then, and it is a process of law and perfectly above board to then apply for asylum. And it is Trump that has no respect for the law. And it is the Customs and Border Patrol and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement that has an attitude of flouting the law when they feel like it. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And when it comes to the Abolish ICE community, I have some bad news. One of ours, I had reported over the last couple of weeks has disappeared. And there was a real whiplash development. Evidently, we were told by a family member that we trusted that that Eudora Lively was well and safe. And long story short, this is apparently not the case. The effort to search for her has been restarted. Where this family member is coming from is a point of, well, confusion and suspicion. And Eudora Lively is still missing. She was, as I said before, very committed to doing the work, kept clippings in her purse, in her backpack, that is, of developments in the protest against the harboring of the fascistic ICE compound here in Portland, and was dedicated, not just in word, but in deed, to stopping that criminality and to liberating the children and the families that have been separated, getting them back together. So that's still happening. We still need information. Please look on my Facebook posts, or use the search term Eudora Lively on Facebook to find information if you know anything about where she might be or where she has been seen since the 6th of November. Please let us know. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Before I change topics, I want to conclude with the last paragraph from the article about the continuation of separation of families, the sneaky policy of the Trump administration. It's a quote from Zissimer saying, "The government's position is that because these are not zero-tolerance cases, they don't have to tell us or anyone about them. Our position is that when children are separated from their parents, there needs to be some oversight," end quote. All right, I want to turn to an article in the Los Angeles Blade. The Transgender Law Center on Monday released the results of an autopsy that shows a transgender Honduran woman with HIV was beaten before she died while in U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody. Roxana Hernandez, who was from the Honduran capital of Tegucigalpa, was among a group of trans women who were part of the 300-person caravan that traveled to the U.S. border earlier this year. And speaking for myself, that was hard enough for her because people are firmly anti-trans in Honduras, and she even suffered, I'm sure, some aggression from her fellow refugees. It's a hellish place in general, and even worse if you're transgender. So, of course, she was coming to the U.S., to seek refugee status. But returning to the article, U.S. Customs and Border Protection took Hernandez into custody on May 9th when she asked for asylum at the San Ysidro Port of Entry near San Diego. That's legal, by the way. She entered ICE custody 4 days later and was being housed in a unit for trans detainees at the Cibola County Correctional Center in Milan, New Mexico, before she died at a hospital on May 25th. ICE in a press release notes Hernandez was hospitalized with symptoms of pneumonia, dehydration, and complications associated with HIV. That's their quote on May 17th. ICE also said Hernandez died from cardiac arrest, but the Transgender Law Center, which on Monday announced it plans to file a wrongful death lawsuit in New Mexico with R. Andrew Free, a Nashville-based immigration lawyer, provided the Washington Blade with a copy of a second autopsy report that former Georgia Chief Medical Examiner Chris Sperry performed, a second autopsy in Albuquerque, New Mexico, on June 8th. The report notes the second autopsy, quote, disclosed evidence of physical abuse that includes deep bruising on Hernandez's ribcage and deep contusions extending onto the back, end quote. She was beaten, perhaps beaten to death, out of the frying pan into the fire, and now dead. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Turning to further information about transgenderism, there's an article by Brian Tannehill, and it asks the question, it's in, well, let's see, it was published November 27th, and it says, a lot of people wonder what makes people transgender. The same way we ask what makes people gay or what causes autism. The consensus scientific answer, he writes, is that on all three, is unsatisfyingly vague. There is no single reason, and what we can see appears to be a combination of multiple factors involving genetics, epigenetics, oligogenetics, and potentially some environmental factors. There's a broad consensus that it's not caused by bad parenting or what your mom ate when she was pregnant or not going to church enough. Now that I look at the name Bryn Tannehill, it may be a female name, I really don't know. However, this isn't enough for random and not-so-random cranks to propose absolutely bonkers reasons for why people are transgender. Because the public and the media know so little about transgender people in general, some of these people are getting more play than they deserve. So in no particular order, he writes, here are 15 of the nuttiest suggested reasons for why people are transgender and why they deserve to be laughed at rather than taken seriously for a nanosecond. Stupid idea number one, the internet makes you transgender. Remember how in the 80s and 90s homophobes thought that being around gay people would turn you gay? Same thing, except now it's virtual because the internet is full of transgender predators recruiting and grooming children to become one of us. This got popular after one study, and that's in scare quotes, showed that trans youth interacted with other trans youth online. Shocking. Stupid idea number two. Seeing Chaz Bono on TV makes people transgender. Remember Chaz on Dancing on the Stars a few years back? It seemed like all the crazies crawled out of the woodwork to bemoan how Chaz would normalize being transgender and make people think that being transgender was cool and give it a try because Chaz and Dancing. Stupid idea number three. Anime makes people decide to be transgender. Dr. Ray Blanchard has spent a lifetime peddling weird ideas about the transgender community that never really caught on. And speaking for myself, one of his famous idea was autogynephilia. And I just won't go there. But anyway, returning to the text, except with other people who really hate transgender people as well, now that he's no longer a practicing clinician or researcher, the primary outlet for his theories is Twitter, just like our president. He's another very stable genius. Blanchard's latest hypothesis is that watching anime somehow makes people transgender because some transgender people like anime, and people who are treated like outsiders are never drawn to cultural touch zones for outsiders. By this logic, Star Trek The Next Generation probably made all the Gen Xers trans people. Stupid idea number four. Goth culture disappeared because they all turned transgender. Another one of Blanchard's Twitter ramblings claims that goth culture disappeared because they all turned trans, and certainly not because they got jobs, got married, had kids, and basically did all the things that people do when they get older. Stupid idea number five. A world that accepts transgender people is worse than one run by Mike Pence. It takes a rather special sort of feminist to align yourself with the religious right because you're more afraid of the consequences of transgender people being accepted than you are of people like Mike Pence being in a position to do what they want with women's bodies and to enforce gender norms via religious opprobrium. Skipping ahead to stupid idea number six, people transition to access female privilege. And Bryn writes, the icky little world of men's rights advocates, incels, and Jordan Peterson fans produces some bizarre, irrational, and dangerous ideas. Among the more bizarre is that transgender women are just beta males who transition in order to gain access to female privilege. After the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, it should be obvious to everyone how much privilege that entails. Stupid idea number 7, demons make people transgender. Back in the day, in 2017, blaming transgenderism on Satan and demons was the province of snake-handling churches in Arkansas. Preachers who say God commanded them to get another private jet, and Trump administration judicial nominees. We can thank Dr. Ray Blanchard for expanding the audience a bit by tweeting that exorcisms and detransition sound pretty much the same to him. Stupid idea number 8, peer pressure makes you transgender. Worst sales pitch ever. Hey, since I came out as trans, I've been forced to hold my pee until I get life-threatening bladder infections, beaten, sexually assaulted, insulted by teachers in the administration, and banned from participating in school athletics. The Secretary of Education is working hard to ensure that everyone has a religious right to discriminate against me as well. You should definitely try experimenting with gender, too. And Bryn writes, this is why 75% of transgender students feel unsafe at school. Stupid idea number 9. Jewish billionaires turn you transgender. The next idiotic supposition combines anti-Semitism with globalist conspiracy theories, namely that there is a secret plot to destroy the world with gender ideology using Jewish lucre from billionaires George Soros, Jennifer Pritzker, and Martine Rothblatt. Their evidence? Some of them give to Planned Parenthood, liberal universities, and the ACLU. Yeah, it's just that stupid and offensive. Stupid idea number 10. Big Pharma is making everyone transgender. Normally, people who engage in Big Pharma conspiracy theories, e.g. they're hiding the cure for cancer, aren't allowed in the building, much less given the microphone in a debate over public health policy, yet here we are. Bryn writes, this is dumb on so many levels. First, in the U.S., how do you make money off a tiny sliver of the population that doesn't have any money to begin with? Second, estrogen is generic and ridiculously cheap already. Finally, and everywhere else but the world, everyone else in the world but the U.S., National Health Services already provide care and profits are relatively low. These are corporations, Bryn writes. Why would they put so much money into something with so little profit in it? Stupid idea number 11, tofu will turn you transgender. Another one brought to you by the Jordan Peterson crowd that spends their days navel-gazing about where beta males come from and how women ruin everything. The logic, if you call it that, soybeans have minute amounts of phytoestrogens and therefore eating food with soy in it feminizes you through the magic of super science. Stupid idea number 12. Vaccines make people transgender. Here's one from the anti-vaxxer crowd. Because you just knew it was coming. Their hypothesis is that because vaccines contain DNA and RNA, they mutate human sex chromosomes, replacing X's with Y's and vice versa. In terms of plausible origin stories, this is on a par with being bitten by a radioactive spider or transgender person. Stupid idea number 13, chemtrails are a government plot to make people transgender because everything eventually devolves into chemtrails. It's like Godwin's law of conspiracy theories. Stupid idea number 14, liberal activist therapists railroad people into being transgender. And Bryn writes, I'm not sure what sort of therapist tells their clients to do things that will make their lives exponentially more difficult and complicated. And finally, stupid idea number 15, people are transitioning because it's a fad or a social contagion. If you hadn't noticed, the Trump administration is running the show. This theory makes as much sense as converting to Judaism in 1930s Germany because you saw a lot about it in the news. Plus, the one study purporting to show this is a hot anti-transgender mess of deliberately biased samples, deceptive questions, and unsupported conclusions. So there you have it. Article by Bryn. Let's see if I can find that last name. I can almost find it. I'll dig through those papers. Never mind. I want to change topics again. Again, I ask for your calls, 503-231-8187. So far, I've been talking about real genetic alteration and what it means for the state of journalism today. Been talking about the Trump administration continuing its policy of separating families and just sneaking it under the wire. And I've been talking about transgenderism and the article that I read, somewhat satiric, was obviously talking about male to female transgender. The time is 9:44. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. The number to call, 503-231-8187. This has been Making You Think. Go ahead and call us up and tell us what you think. You have questions? Call up and ask. 503-231-8187. From that commie publication, USA Today, global warming is making us sick. The proportion of Earth's population that is vulnerable to heat-related death and disease continues to grow both in the United States and around the world because of human-caused climate change, according to a report released this week. Climate change is a medical emergency. That's according to the report co-author Renee Salas, a doctor of emergency medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital. She said, quote, "It is truly harming the health of Americans and especially the most vulnerable. Children, the elderly, minorities, and the poor," end quote. Growing populations of older people, people living in cities, and people with diseases are prime reasons for increasing vulnerability, according to the report, which was released Wednesday and published by The Lancet, Britain's most prestigious medical journal. In fact, just last year, about 157 million vulnerable people were exposed to heat waves globally. That's 18 million more than in 2016. I just want to read that last sentence again. That's 18 million more than in 2016. Christy Ebby of the University of Washington is quoted in the article saying, "We're seeing increases in the frequency, intensity, and duration of heat waves as our populations age and as they move into cities that have gotten to be urban heat islands. We're seeing a large increase in the number of people who are vulnerable to high temperatures," end quote. She said another concern was that the potential geographic range of the mosquito that can carry diseases such as dengue fever and Zika has increased dramatically with higher temperatures. They're coming north. Climate change, they write, aka global warming, is caused by the burning of fossil fuels such as oil, gas, and coal, which release greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide and methane into the Earth's atmosphere and oceans. That has caused the planet to warm to levels that cannot be explained by natural factors. The report, officially titled The Lancet Countdown on Health and Climate Change, also said that in 2017, 153 billion hours of labor was lost worldwide because of heat exposure. Again, the number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. More on climate change. In 2017, the report said there were 16 extreme weather disasters in the U.S., from powerful hurricanes to catastrophic wildfires that each caused more than $1 billion in damage and together cost more than $313 billion. The report says, while each type of disaster poses different threats to human health, they can all lead to death. The official death toll was estimated at 3,278 lives, though the actual number is likely much higher, highlighting the need for better surveillance, end quote. In an editorial that accompanied the report, The Lancet warned that in the next few decades, heat stroke and extreme weather will have redefined global labor and production beyond recognition. Multiple cities will be uninhabitable, and migration patterns will be far beyond those levels, already creating pressure worldwide. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. The report was written by experts from 27 leading academic institutions, the United Nations, and intergovernmental agencies from every continent, according to The Lancet. Calling climate change a dire health crisis, Salas concluded, quote, "If we don't start taking these preventative measures, mitigating the greenhouse gas pollution that is choking us every day, many more Americans will continue to suffer and die. This doesn't have to be," end quote. Once again, the number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I was talking earlier about the aggression against people seeking refuge from societies that the U.S., Pentagon and CIA destroyed, starting with the Reagan administration. The irony of that, and I have some more information on it, but I believe that I have a caller, so I'll go to first caller, Curtis. Number to call once again, 503-231-8187. Hi, Curtis.
Hi, yeah, just one comment on the immigration thing. NPR, you know, they take it out of context. Direct investment is the cause of this. I mean, these are refugees that are fleeing corporate malfeasance in the third world. And it's just an important issue. And One other thing is, you're talking a few weeks ago, you've been talking about socialism, and there's a book called The Elite Consensus, and they talk about that your tax dollars, if a multinational corporation goes to a third world country and totally screws that country up, our tax dollars, we insure these corporations against their loss. There's an actual insurance that we pay for foreign direct investment in case they screw up, and we cover their loss. And to me, they're the real socialists, the true multinational corporations. They get far and away more money from the taxpayer and the government than anybody else.
Let's see, referring to The Elite Consensus, When Corporations Wield the Constitution, a paperback by George Drafin. The blurb for that on the web says, financial and business corporations throw millions of dollars at think tanks, lobbyists, and universities, exploiting writers and artists galore. Their assignment: to twist words, gnarl symbols, sell lies, whip people into line. The Elite Consensus fingers the American Enterprise Institute, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Chamber of Commerce, the Heritage Foundation, and many other, quote, educational, end quote, corporations, which men of property have unleashed on this planet. So, and let's see who's publishing that. I pulled it up. Of course, it popped up on Amazon. And I'm not sure who the publisher is just this second. But The Elite Consensus, anyway, by George Drafin, Draffan.
And it's about neoliberalism and trilateralism, you know, which, and this is where, well, since you looked it up, this is where Alex Jones and those guys, they have the wrong, they're right about corporations, but, like, for instance, they do mention George Soros in The Elite Consensus. Because he is a member of the Trilateral Commission. But and this is where there is some common ground with middle-of-the-road right people, I think, in the corporate... If we can concentrate on corporations and military spending, I think there's some common ground there.
Well, and I think I know where you're going with that. I mean, Soros has been used as an alternate word for the Jewish conspiracy, and so he is now the boogeyman of the far right. And yet Soros is a real individual. He really is absurdly rich, and what he does reflects the fact that we have a grotesque disproportionate distribution of wealth in this country, and we're going to suffer from it.
Exactly. And of course he's not a Jewish conspiracy. That's ridiculous. But he is, like you're saying, insanely wealthy, and he's made most of it off of neoliberal corporate investing and supporting corporate, whatever term you want to call it, the malfeasance.
Apex Press is the name of the publisher. Just found it.
Yeah.
APEX Press.
It's a short book, and it was written in the late 90s, so it uses it. It does talk about the Clintons in there, too.
I see that
they were
the...
They were in power at the time.
I see that the cover's by Matt Worker, who was quite a friend to KBOO and helped us with our posters.
Yeah, the cover art is awesome. It's incredible.
Okay, well, anything else?
No, thanks for doing your show. I listen to you every week.
Thanks for calling in. I wanted to add to what LC was calling about earlier. By the way, the number to call, 503-231-8187. An article from Smithsonian.com, in the summer of 1942, the SS Drottningholm set sail, carrying hundreds of desperate Jewish refugees en route to New York City from Sweden. Among them was Herbert Carl Friedrich Bahr, a 28-year-old from Germany who was also seeking entry to the United States. When he arrived, he told the same story as his fellow passengers. As a victim of persecution, he wanted asylum from Nazi violence. But during a meticulous interview process, is this starting to sound familiar, that involved five separate government agencies, Barr's story began to unravel. Days later, the FBI accused Bahr of being a Nazi spy. They said the Gestapo had given him $7,000 to steal American industrial secrets, and that he'd posed as a refugee in order to sneak into the country unnoticed. His case was rushed to trial, and prosecution called for the death penalty. What Bahr didn't know, or perhaps didn't mind, was that his story would be used as an excuse to deny visas to thousands of Jews fleeing the horrors of the Nazi regime. World War II prompted the largest displacement of human beings the world has ever seen. Although today's refugee crisis is starting to approach its unprecedented scale, but even with millions of European Jews displaced from their homes, the United States had a poor track record offering asylum. Most notoriously, in June 1939, the German ocean liner St. Louis and its 937 passengers, almost all Jewish, were turned away from the port of Miami, forcing the ship to return to Europe. More than a quarter died in the Holocaust. Now, speaking for myself, the horror of life and the extreme death toll in Honduras, El Salvador, parts of Guatemala, is not a direct analog to the focused, intended genocidal fury of the Germans versus the Jews, transgender people, gay people, communists, etc., in World War II. It is not the extermination camps. But it is a severe and bloody crisis. It is certainly a reason to seek asylum. So I see the echoes across the years. And when that ship was turned away, there were plenty of Americans who would say, oh, Germans aren't that bad. That's not really happening. They don't really need asylum. And of course, what they really meant was, these are Jews and we're afraid of them. And we've been told that they're bad, and we believe that racist crap, and so we won't accept this ship. And this is what's going on in the border. With the U.S., we have, fortunately for us, potentially fortunately, we have a labor force, a young, strong labor force coming up from the South to replace our demographic gap, one that will severely tax in coming decades the Social Security Administration and its reserves. Unless we let them in. If we let them in and they become productive U.S. citizens, if we let millions of people in with that demographic, then Social Security can be saved. And Social Security has already had quite a balm from people who've come into the United States, contributed heavily over years into a false Social Security account or into any Social Security account, and then forced back out of the country, and certainly never have had the eligibility to draw the funds that they paid in advance. And that's what Social Security is. It's a pay-it-forward insurance system. You pay it forward quite substantially. 12% of your paycheck is going to pay it forward. So don't let anyone ever tell you that Social Security is an entitlement in the sense of a false entitlement or something that you shouldn't be getting. You really are entitled to it because you paid it in advance. It's insurance. Time is 9:56 on KBOO Portland. You're listening to Press Watch. And just wrapping up and following up on the history lesson, in the Court of Public Opinion, this is from the Smithsonian.com article on turning away Jews in World War II here in the U.S., the story of a spy disguised as a refugee was too scandalous to resist. America was months into the largest war the world had ever seen, and in February 1942, Roosevelt had ordered the internment of tens of thousands of Japanese Americans. Every day, the headlines announced new Nazi conquests. And skipping ahead, the American ambassador to France, William Bullitt, made the unsubstantiated statement that France fell in 1940 partly because of a vast network of spying refugees. He was quoted saying, more than one half the spies captured doing actual military spy work against the French army were refugees from Germany. Do you believe there are no Nazi and communist agents of this sort in America? End quote. It's the sort of thing that they said. Now we say, there are bad people. They're in MS-13. They're soldiers, they're gangs, they're terrifying, they're strong, they're weak, they're sick. They intend to depend on us. Anything, say anything, and what they're really saying is, those people are brown. And we want white apartheid rule to continue and strengthen under Trump, or do we? Thanks for listening. This is Press Watch on KBOO Portland. You've been listening at 90.7 FM and other frequencies in the greater Cascadia region and via KBOO.FM, where you can contribute right now. How about $5 a month to KBOO Portland? KBOO.FM, where we go out to all the ships at sea.
The 50th anniversary of KBOO are going on. We're hosting a Latinx Peña and open house at Studio One here at 20 Southeast 8 in Portland. We are celebrating 30 plus years of Latinx contributions to KBOO with poetry, music, performance, and food. If you cannot get here to the live event, you can listen starting at 8 p.m. at kboo.fm or on the KBOO app. Our Latin Expansion Open House will be on the air for 4 hours starting at 8 p.m. till midnight. Call us at KBOO Studios for your shout outs at 503-231-8187.
KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, We Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. Support KBOO, where music makes the movement.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society's concert season. On Friday, November 30th, the PFS concert features Patrick Ball and the Legends of the Celtic Harp in their program titled A Winter Gift. These three famed harpers perform Celtic legends and weave English and Irish literature with rare pieces of holiday music. The concert and storytelling event is at the Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steele in Portland, at 7:30 p.m. On January 18th next year,